material things are shitty goals. They really aren't very motivating when you really get down to it. So yeah, you know, like that's, it's kind of a side effect of the goals that you probably actually want. So when you say, oh, you know, like I want to own a Lamborghini Aventador, cool. That's not really a good goal because like, it doesn't guide you. It doesn't tell you anything of how to get there. It's just a thing. It's some tangible item that is a result of a goal that actually is worthwhile.
Hey, what's going on, guys? This is Carlos, your boy Los, with the Motor Misfit Podcast. Thank you for checking us out, for listening to another episode. And today it is an amazing episode because we have Dan Hurlburt from Normal Guy Supercar. So if you have not checked out Dan's channel or videos, definitely go on YouTube, check it out, Normal Guy Supercar, where he talks about how he is a normal guy and he owns a supercar and demystifies the whole supercar ownership experience to let everybody know that you could actually own a supercar while being a normal person. I don't want to get too much more into it because it is a great episode, and Dan provides so much insight. So let's just get into it and let's start it.
Yo, 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 what is going on, everybody? This is Carlos, your boy Los, with the Motor Misfit Podcast. Thank you for everyone that is joining in and listening today. Thank you for all the support. Today, guys, we have an incredible show, an incredible episode, and an incredible guest. Today, we're talking with Dan Hurlburt, and he is the co-founder of Gated Six and YouTube creator of Normal Guy Supercar. What is going on, Dan?
Hey, how you doing, man?
I'm doing good, man. Thank you for joining me here and taking some time with us. Truly.
Absolutely. It's my pleasure.
Awesome, man. So, guys, Dan, if you do not know Dan, then we will get to where you can get to know him a little bit better. But Dan is a true entrepreneur and car enthusiast. His passion for cars, especially Ferraris, is documented on his popular YouTube channel, Normal Guy Supercar, where he takes you through his experience of being a normal guy, well, that also owns a supercar. Growing in popularity is not enough for Dan, though. He also co-founded the company Gated Six, a company that offers conversion kits for supercar owners wanting a manual transmission in their supercar. With all of this that Dan is doing, we can only expect truly amazing things from him and his team in the future. Today, Dan will take us through his incredible journey and provide us with some great advice. I'll pass it on over to him and he can share a little bit more about himself.
Thanks. Yeah, it's kind of funny because you know, I have a background in software, so getting into cars was never really the plan. And it was kind of accidental. Although, admittedly, when I first was going to college, I was going for mechanical engineering because I thought I was going to go work on cars for my career. And then this was, you know, the late 90s. And then, of course, the internet was kind of going crazy. And so I thought, you know, we should probably get in this computer thing. It looks like it makes a lot of money.
So you chased the money and then it got you to the cars.
Yeah. It came full circle. So, you know, it definitely being in the Ferrari world, it doesn't hurt to have a little bit of financial backing. So, you know, it's not, unfortunately for, you know, like there's no way to get into the Ferrari world for cheap, unfortunately. So having the software background certainly helped in that respect.
No, but, definitely. So tell us a little bit about that, though. Like, have you always been a Ferrari fanatic? Is it just like from younger that it's always been Ferrari, or has it been supercars in general?
No, actually neither. When I first turned 16, you know, I like to joke that it all started with Legos, and I love playing with Legos, and that evolved into RC cars. as you get a little bit older, and then eventually into real cars once I could actually drive. And of course, when you know, when you're a teenager and you have no money and a terrible job, you don't, you know, you buy what you can. And I was in love with muscle cars at that time. So my first car was actually a 1971 Chevy Nova, and it was a complete piece of shit. And but I loved it. I absolutely loved that car. And that really got me into cars because it was constantly breaking. And so I constantly had to fix it. And so I started having to learn how to work on cars, and you know, because I couldn't afford to take it anywhere, I just simply had no money. Yeah. And that kind of kicked off my passion for cars. So for most of my life, I've actually been, I would say, a muscle car fan and an American car fan. And then, so yeah, quite a difference, right? And so I've had, you know, multiple muscle cars, a couple of Mustangs, you know, the stuff that's kind of a bit more traditional for an American car fanatic. And then eventually that kind of, I went from being really into drag racing, and then I started getting a little bit more into road racing. And so, you know, unfortunately, muscle cars aren't super awesome at road courses. If I'm being
that's
polite.
Not their forte at all.
Right. Yeah. You know, I mean, you can do a lot of work and make them sort of good, but, you know, not really. So I eventually got into a Subaru STI, and that was pretty fun. And then I've actually had two of those. And then, fast forward to later in life, and I'd been doing the software thing for a long time, had some luck with my career. And I decided, you know, I really wanted to get back into something fun. And believe it or not, I actually started off looking at the new Mustang GT350. This was, you know, 5+ years ago. So it just come out. The new GT350 with the flat plane crank had come out. Yes. And, you know, it was just a phenomenal car. Absolutely amazing.
I am a GT350 owner right now. So.
Oh, yeah. Great. Yeah. Yeah, fantastic car. It's truly one of the best cars you can get brand new under $100,000, in my opinion. Yeah,
definitely.
Especially for track use. I mean, that's really where it excels. So I was looking at that, but being the frugal person I am, I thought, you know, if I'm going to spend $65,000 on a Mustang, you know, that's kind of hard to swallow. To me, Mustangs have always been cheap and fun. You know, it's like, hey, you can go buy a Mustang for, you know, reasonable price and beat the hell out of it and have a hell of a good time. So I started looking at other, you know, what else could I get for that price point? And I noticed you could get a Ferrari 360 for that price at the time, but did research on those, and they still have the timing belts. And frankly, they aren't that fast according to modern standards. Yeah. And they need a lot of work. You know, they're getting old.
Yeah, definitely.
They're not
as reliable, let's say.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not to say that they're unreliable. It's just that they need some love. Yeah. And so then I thought, well, what if I spent just a little bit more money? And that led me to the, at the time, the C7 Z06. You could pick those up for about $100,000 brand new with a warranty. But I admittedly, I'm just not a super big Corvette fan. And so
was that the one that was on your channel that you also used, that kind of like Asturo, or was that another?
No, that was just a regular C7.
Ah, okay.
It was not a Z06. And so I kind of started looking at more of what can you get for $100,000 if you're going to spend a little more. And that led me to the Ferrari F430. Hmm. And I thought, man, you could, you know, that's a serious car. It's got, you know, a lot of horsepower. It's got basically 490, 500 horsepower. It's, in my opinion, it's a beautiful car. It doesn't have the timing belt service. It's much more reliable. So after some research, I made a terrible decision and decided to buy one. And I kind of started this whole thing. So prior to that, it's funny because there's so many people I meet who tell me about how their dream has always been to own a Ferrari or some sort of supercar. And I just never really cared that much about Ferraris because I thought they're always out of reach. You know, I thought there's no way you can afford one. There's no way, you know, you can own one and keep it, you know, reasonable cost. And as it turns out, that's actually crap. You know, you really can't afford these with, I mean, I'm not saying they're cheap, but they're cheaper than most people think, especially if you're willing to work on them. And that's kind of how the whole channel came to be. Is once I owned this F430, I told myself, I'm not going to take it to the dealership. I'm going to work on it myself. And I thought, you know, it's still just a car. It can't be impossible to work on. It can't be that hard. And so I started, you know, like for example, the first, you know, thing I really wanted to do was do an oil change. And I Google, hey, you know, like how to do an oil change in an F430. And there's some stuff out there about it, mostly, you know, like posts on message boards and stuff, but there was no videos. And I thought, you know, if I'm going to do it and I film it, I bet you people would actually want to see that. Yeah. And so I did. And, you know, that first video of DIY wrenching on my Ferrari, which admittedly I screwed up, you know, I splashed oil all over the place and, you know, made a mess and all this stuff, but I did it. Yeah. And it just, it, all of a sudden, like at that time, it was funny because at that time on YouTube, there wasn't the big DIY car stuff that there is today. Okay. Right. It was, that was kind of novel at the time. And I was the first idiot out there to film working on Ferraris. So,
and that was the one that, that was the one that went viral, right?
Yeah. I mean, it went reasonably big. You know, I think it's got like 200,000 views. It was picked up by the DuPont Registry and some other magazine or some other online, you know, articles and stuff. And that really kickstarted the whole thing. And that's, again, because it was kind of a novel concept at the time, you know, like, you know, people don't wrench on their Ferrari. Oh, you don't work on your own Ferrari. That's, you know, it's a big no-no. Oh, you're going to hurt the value of the car. You know, all these myths, you know, that you had out there. And that kind of was part of the thing for me, is I wanted to dispel the myth of Ferrari ownership, because there was just so much stupid crap out there. You know, people come up to me and be like, I heard it cost $5,000 to change the oil on the car. I'm like, no, you know, it's like 150 bucks, you know, just stupid things like that, that just people just have no clue when it comes to these cars. They're such a mystery.
But well, yeah, end, well, that's the thing.
It's just a car.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. It's like when you think, or I mean, now it's changing, right? Because that's how I was able to get into the GT350, because I had a conversation with Ed Bolian. He's a very big guy of, you can own a supercar for the same price as owning a Camry. And I'm like, okay. So I started looking at that. And, well, needless to say, I didn't go to a supercar. I went to a GT350. But I guess nowadays it's a little bit more common to see like what you call a normal person with a supercar. But before it was like, oh, you had to be a millionaire. You had to be, you have to be well off and this and that. And like you said, like, oh yeah, oil change costs $5,000. Oh, don't even talk about if anything else goes wrong, because that'll be like close to $1 million. Like this is all the stuff that you hear, or that you used to hear. And it's like, come to find out, like, you know, you could own a supercar.
Right. It's all part of the mystique of Ferrari and supercars. You know, Ferrari wants you to believe that if you do anything other than send the car to a Ferrari dealership, you've ruined the car.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's the, and that's, you know, part of their business. That's how they get money from people and stay in business and make a bunch of money. And kudos to them. They've created an entire culture around it that, you know, people believe. But it's all kind of bullshit. You know, like that's the reality of it, is it is just a car, you know, in the end. And to Ed Bullion's point, you know, I've said the same thing. It's true. You can own supercars for much less than you think. The problem is the barrier to entry is steep. So the initial cost is the big problem. You know, buying a $100,000 car that's completely optional, let's be real, it's a totally optional expense. That's a lot of disposable money that you need to have on hand. And, you know, that's not to say you need $100,000 up front, because, you know, that's another myth that everyone's like, oh, you've got to pay cash for a supercar. And that's actually crap as well. You know, financing is so cheap nowadays that there's no reason not to take out loans, you know, when it's like below 3%. But here's the thing. These cars, when you buy them used, so like my F430 I bought, five plus years ago? It was a 2005. At the time, it was 12-ish years old. You know, it already devalued more than half. So it wasn't going to devalue by half again. Yeah. You know, so it wasn't going to go from $100,000 to being worth only $50,000. It was going to go from $100,000 to being worth $75,000. You know, that's actually what I sold it for when I finally sold it. And I sold it at a major discount because I sold it to a friend. Okay. So, you know, I in that meantime, I got to enjoy it for 3+ years, have all sorts of fun, crazy experiences, and drive it a lot. I drove it over 20,000 miles, which, wow, again, in the Ferrari world is, you know, unheard of. People don't really drive these things. They just sit there and stare at them. So, you know, I truly view it as a car, not as this piece of art. It is not something that, you know, shouldn't be touched. You know, I like experiencing it. I like, even better than that, is when I get to have other people experience it with me, you know, to be able to take people out and see them smile and really get to experience, you know, what it's like to be in a Ferrari for the first time. That is an amazing, awesome thing. It's truly one of the most remarkable things about these cars.
Oh, that's awesome, man. And that is true. And I like the fact that you like to, that you want to share it with everybody else and kind of, like you said, demystify this whole supercar ownership experience and just say like, hey, you know, you could do this. Yep. you know, so that's amazing, man. So that video with the oil change kind of set everything off on a whirlwind. And then you already had the channel like going before then, or was that like the very first video? How did that?
So I had, believe it or not, just, it was just a regular YouTube channel for documenting my life. Like I just uploaded videos from my own, whatever thing was going on in my life. So like, if you go back prior to my F430, so you have to go back more than 5 years. Yeah. There's all sorts of random videos about just, you know, random daily crap. And so when I started doing the videos, working on the Ferrari, eventually I said, you know, okay, maybe I need to kind of turn this into a real channel. So I changed it. And then I don't even know, it must've been over a year into it. You know, I was like, I can't have it just be my name. Cause that was the channel. The channel was just Daniel Relbert. And I was like, this, you know, doesn't flow great, you know, it's just whatever. So my wife came up with the idea at that time of calling it Normal Guy Supercar, because she was like, look, you're just a normal guy that owns a supercar. And I'm like, that's perfect, you know, that's entirely what it's all about. And I know, like, everyone says, oh, you're not normal, you've got, you know, money, you can afford a Ferrari. And I'm like, well, I mean, yeah, okay, it's like, so obviously I'm not poor if I could afford a Ferrari, but I'm not a millionaire, and I live in a pretty regular house, you know, it's nothing super awesome. I live in a normal neighborhood, you know, hang out with the neighbors and drink a beer out in the cul-de-sac kind of stuff. It's a fairly normal existence I have. So I'm not, you know, able to retire, you know, in my 40s. I still have to work. I still need to make money, that sort of stuff. So, but anyway,
you are a normal guy. That's what it is.
Right. And you know, like, I'm not sitting there like trying to, like, you know, spout off my normal qualifications, you know, but it just, you know, every once in a while people give me crap about that. And I'm like, you know, it's all relative. That's the thing. Like, there's always someone richer or, you know, has a better position in life or whatever. But, you know, and here's the fascinating thing is I found, now that I'm really immersed in this culture, in the Ferrari culture, the reality is a lot of these very wealthy people are really quote unquote normal guys. Like, a lot of them came into wealth through luck and hard work or whatever. They found the right business, the right thing. And they like the ones that I'm meeting often aren't the stereotypical supercar owner. They're not the, you know, everyone thinks, oh, you know, you own a supercar, you're a douchebag, you're some, you know, whatever,
trust snotty. Fund baby.
Yeah, trust fund baby, a snob, whatever.
Yeah.
And it's not to say that there aren't those people. That's, you know, that definitely exists. But there's a huge number of these people that are just gearheads, true gearheads that just love cars. And they kind of, like, I would say I agree with this. It's kind of like, well, to them and to myself, Ferrari is just the pinnacle of being a gearhead. It's the ultimate car for gearheads.
That's awesome to know, because yeah, a lot of people think, so I'm in South Florida, so here there's a big supercar scene. That's actually how I kind of started Motor Misfit, right? It was more of taking videos and pictures of supercar shows and this and that. But yeah, like, to your point, I've met a lot of cool people, right, that aren't your normal, like you said, douchebags or snobs or stuff like that. They're just regular. Well, maybe not regular, because, you know, they're regular people with a lot of money, let's say. But they're really down-to-earth people. And they're not your typical what you would think a supercar owner would be like. You know,
right. So, I mean, you can go meet these people and have a regular conversation with them, just like you would any other gearhead.
Yeah, definitely.
And the ones that aren't really gearheads, well, you'll know right away and you think, okay, I'm not going to waste my time with you.
Now, talking about gearhead, though.
Yes.
That got you. Well, first off, you have been working on your car. So that is you definitely are a gearhead, but did that get you kind of into going and co-founding Gated Six?
I kind of accidentally fell into that. So
okay,
this whole thing actually is all an accident. Like, none of this is planned. You know, I wish I could say like I had the foresight to think of all these things, but it's not true. Everything kind of came about just naturally. It's all just kind of come together, and, you know, just the next step always was just, you know, right there in front of me, and I just had to grab it. So, you know, I guess you got to take a step back first, right? So the YouTube channel kind of solidified and became a thing, and then that still was not actually my job for quite a long time. You know, it just was something I was doing on the side, a hobby, whatever you want to call it. And it got to the point where I was getting sponsors and making a little bit of money. But at that time, that it was still just a hobby. It was still just for fun. And after a few years, it kind of got to where it was getting close to the point of, hey, this could be some real money. You know, it was paying for the car at this point entirely. So I was like, well, you know, if it's paying for the car, how much further would it have to go to actually, you know, support myself, support my family? And so the big change came forced. So I lost my job. The company I founded, my CEO fired me after I'd been running that company for 4 years. Oh, wow. And so that kind of made me think, all right, I'm kind of done with software. I've been doing it for 20 years. You know, like, I've done multiple startups. I've had, one of them was really lucky and it did well. The rest have all kind of been not so good. So, you know, it's a lot of work, really, really hard work doing these startups, crazy hours. And so getting fired from that was kind of a blessing in disguise. It made me stop and think, okay, should I be doing this for the rest of my career? Do I want to be a software person the rest of my career? And I kind of said, you know, I really love doing this YouTube stuff. I really like working on the cars. That I enjoy much more than the software. So I said, well, how do I make that happen? You know, how do I make this really become my career? And so I got an investor to help me out. He was actually this wealthy guy I've known for a long time. He helped me with my career in the past, kind of as a mentor. And he invested in the company, and we kind of got it going. And then all of a sudden, after doing that for a while, I kind of had this epiphany that I need to start selling parts, because my personality is not this outrageous, drama infused person that runs around and catches cars on fire, although I've had it happen, but, you know, I don't blow up things. I don't intentionally get the cops to chase me. Again, I've had those videos, but like that's not intentional. That's always just kind of
activity.
Right, exactly. It's never intentional. So I'm not good at that. I'm not good at drama. You know, that's not me. And so I can acknowledge, and I saw that my channel is never going to be this huge, incredibly large channel. It just won't, because I have a limited audience that I mostly target. My target audience right now is Ferrari owners. You know, that's truly the people I am trying to reach. And so I said, well, if I can just get them to buy parts through me, that would be huge. And so that was a huge component, and it really kind of solidified this into a real company. So now, you know, we're selling these parts through the website. We do consultation services because, you know, inevitably what happened is all these people would contact me and say, hey, I saw your videos on how to do this or how to do that. Can you help me out? I want to buy a car. You know, let me know how, you know, am I making the right decision? And at first I was helping these people out for free for years. And I started realizing, holy crap, I'm spending, you know, 10 hours a week helping people. You know, this is stupid. Why am I wasting this much time? You know, this is something I should be charging people.
Yeah.
So I started charging them, and sure enough, like they saw the value in that. And now I've helped, I don't know, somewhere between, I'm going to say 400 or 500 people buy or sell a Ferrari. Wow. And so I've been there. I've seen all these different cars. I've looked at them in person. I've seen them online. Whatever. So anyway, so all of that kind of kept evolving. And then what happened was Art Bartosik, who also founded Get It Six, he actually owns European Auto Group down in San Antonio. He is kind of a mad scientist, is what I like to describe him. And so he started doing these conversions for these F430s. He was doing manual conversions. And at the time, you were able to get parts from Ferrari. It was a little bit tricky because Ferrari doesn't really want you to have these parts, but he was able to get them. And so he started doing a couple conversions, and then he decided to really do something quite ballsy, in my opinion. And he converted a 430 Scuderia into a manual. And so, you know, that car never existed as a manual. It was only available in the F1, or actually it's the SF2 transmission. But anyway, and so he contacts me and says, hey, we just converted a Scuderia and we'd love for you to come down to San Antonio and drive it and do a video on it. And I said, you know what? That would be awesome. So I went down there and I test drove it, and it is phenomenal. I mean, it is just such a joy to drive that car. It is so much fun. And so I published that video, and that video really helped kickstart this conversion stuff that EAG was doing. And so fast forward like a year or two, and Art is getting tons of business doing these conversions. But, you know, in that time, I kind of would occasionally go down there and hang out with those guys or meet with Art or talk and whatever, and just kind of help him grow his company and give him suggestions and stuff. And then COVID hits, and all of a sudden, not only did Ferrari basically stop production, but at the same time, they basically said, we don't want people getting these parts anymore. So they effectively made it impossible to get the parts to do a manual conversion. You know, if you really, really try hard, you might be able to get all the parts, but I'm going to say you probably won't. And even if you do, it's going to be extremely expensive. Okay. So suddenly Art has this problem. He's got customers that want these conversions. He promised them conversions, and now he can't get the parts, period. It just, they don't exist anymore. Mm-hmm. So he, again, takes a huge, giant leap of faith and says, you know what, we're going to start making the parts. And so at first he's doing them one off, you know, and that is extraordinarily expensive and it's not scalable. And so at that time, I kind of started getting a little bit more involved. I said, you know, what if I got involved and we productionalize these parts and focus on turning them into kits that you could literally sell a kit to a shop and have the shop do a conversion. And he says, that sounds great. How do we do that? And so that's where I got involved, and we formed Get It Six to basically just do the parts, to not do the actual installations. So it's two separate companies. You have European Auto Group that does installations, and then Get It Six, which actually manufactures and creates these kits. Okay. And so I had to, you know, do some fundraising. We raised probably close to $500,000 to buy these parts in bulk quantities. And then, of course, you know, this is all during COVID, so everything took just way longer than we expected. It was a complete cluster. And we thought, oh, we're going to have these things in a couple months, right? And it ended up being like a year. Oh. And, you know, in the meantime, we started trying to pursue other kits. We're like, hey, let's do these other conversions. So we started doing 599s. And so I bought a 599 to kind of help us do a prototype. And again, I thought I was going to own that car for 2 months, maybe three. And it's been 14 and I still own it. And it's still not done. You know, it's going to be done in the next week or two. But nice. It just, you know, just everything conspired to make it more difficult. And so anyway, so it's been a long, ridiculously hard journey. And I finally feel like we're starting to like crest the hump. You know, it's starting to actually be good. And we got some really big things that are planned that we aren't going to share with people yet. But yeah, you guys will like this. We got some stuff planned.
Awesome. No, and yeah, they can definitely go on the YouTube channel, Normal Guy Supercar, and check out Gated Six and also normalguysupercar.com, because yes, that's where you have your consulting services, right?
Yep, that's where I sell the consulting services and parts.
All right, perfect. So yeah, you guys definitely have to stay tuned, because off of all of that Dan just said, you know, some good things are coming in the future.
Yeah.
So definitely keep checking up on him, because yeah, I'm excited to see what comes out of that. But no, Dan, that's amazing, man. And I love the fact how, you know, like I just love your whole story. And I gotta say, I'm also a fan. I am a subscriber, and that's actually how I found your channel. I think the first video that I seen was that one where it was like, oh, well, you know, I lost my job.
Yeah.
And I still own a supercar and whatever. And I was just like, wow, this is actually interesting, because he's still, I remember telling my wife, I'm like, look, he's just a normal guy, works in the IT industry, well, actually an IT leader, but you own a supercar. And then that's what kind of like got me in. I was like, oh, subscribe. I'm gonna keep checking out the rest of the videos. But nah, man, I mean, that's amazing how you got into everything, started the YouTube channel, are so popular there now, and also started this company that, you know, although obviously COVID slowed down some things, but we can only expect that everything's gonna be A-okay in the future there. So thank you for sharing that, man. That is definitely amazing. Now, one question that I do have for you, I kind of want to jump to the next section of our interview. I just want to know, like, and I know, and congratulations, I know you have a newborn right now, so congratulations. Yes. On being a parent. Thank you. So
thank you very much.
I know that it's taking a lot of your time.
Absolutely.
And, and that might be the answer to this next question. But, you know, what has you fired up about the future? What has you fired up about the end of the year and going into 2022?
Sure. I mean, obviously, on the personal side, I'm extraordinarily excited to be a father and to see my son grow. And I have to say, I'll admit, like, fatherhood was never something I really wanted to do, because I was scared to death of it. And now that I'm, you know, now that I see my son and everything, it just, it's completely changed my thoughts on it. And I just love it. But I guess focusing more on the company and the channel and where we're going, you know, I think I'm super excited to finally drive my 599. I really think that that's going to be exciting. And so hopefully that'll kind of wrap up this year. That's going to be kind of the big hurrah for the end of this year. You know, we also are working on that 355, and I think that's going to be pretty fun. But I think I don't know exactly what's going to happen next, because a lot of what we do, we have to kind of react to what's going on in the car world, you know? So there's certain like things that we can count on. I mean, we know drama sells. We know people want to see cops. We know people want to see stuff blow up. We know that people want to see, you know, they want to see cars get worked on. You know, unfortunately, like some of the channels have sensationalized doing these like cars that were salvaged, you know, like I personally hate that because it's not reality. You know, like most people looking to buy a Ferrari don't think, you know, I'm going to go buy a Ferrari that's wrecked and try to restore it. So that's like the one in 10,000, maybe even less. And so I don't do that on my channel because I don't think it's real. Like it's purely sensationalism, you know. But I'm not saying that like that's not a good formula. Clearly it's working, you know, some of these channels are getting tons of views doing that, but that's not what I kind of am targeting, you know. Yeah. So I guess all that being said, you know, the 599 I bought to convert and to sell. So as much as it's a beautiful and wonderful car, once it's done, I'm going to sell it. And so that brings up, what do we do next? You know, I'm going to have this, you know, cash available to use towards growing the company. What do we do with that? And, you know, obviously the most obvious answer is we're going to buy another car.
Yeah, well, definitely.
I don't know what that car is, but I've been discussing, you know, I have a, you know, I brought in Adam. He's now a co-owner and normal guy. And so we've been discussing it and we think we know what we're going to do, but I kind of don't want to give it away yet. But there's, you know, there's some interesting cars that I think would be exciting. I'll just put it that way.
No. And just could you at least let us know, is it going to be another Ferrari or is it going to be something else? Or I guess you don't have to answer that question.
I mean, here's the thing. People have chastised me a little bit because I've done so much Ferrari content, but yeah. I'm a believer in becoming an expert at things you do. And I think it takes a long time to become an expert. You know, you don't do it overnight.
Yeah.
So I really wanted to learn Ferrari. I really wanted to immerse myself, you know, as much as possible in the Ferrari world, in the Ferrari culture, and understand these cars as best I could. I feel like I'm at a point where I can genuinely say, okay, I'm a Ferrari expert now. So that leads me to think that maybe it's time to become an expert in another thing.
I like how you answered that. But that is great. All right, perfect. Well, we definitely look forward to those next things for sure. thank you for all that, and that is amazing. What's your son's name, if you don't mind me asking?
So my son's name is Anderson Sebastian, and so his initials are ASH, so I call him Ash.
Oh, that's awesome. I like how you guys did that.
Yeah, there's definitely an Army of Darkness reference there.
Awesome. Yep, with the chainsaw and all.
Yes, that's right, housewares.
Yep. Well, congratulations with Anderson for sure. And yeah, I'm really looking forward. I know the listeners are really looking forward for the future that Normal Guy Supercar and Gated Six is going to go. Now, yes. I want to pivot over to our lightning questions. These are quick questions. They might not be quick answers, but definitely quick questions that I'm just gonna ask you as we're kind of getting down to the end of our interview.
Sure.
We'll start with the first one. What is that one car that sparked your automotive enthusiasm?
Interesting. I mean, it sounds boring, but I guess that 71 Nova I got kind of really got me into cars.
Okay.
I would say, I guess in a slightly distant world, the 1969 Mustang Boss 429 was always kind of the ultimate car for me when I was young. And that got me into muscle cars. And then, of course, I could not afford a Boss 429, obviously. So I kind of thought, well, you know, I just wanted to get a muscle car. And so the Nova that I bought was the only thing I could afford because it was $2,000, you know, back then. And that's all I had. So I guess that kind of the Boss 429 was always like the ultimate muscle car for me.
Okay.
But it's funny because, you know, now I'm not really all that into muscle cars.
Well, that 71 Nova is definitely a legend. And right now, they're definitely not going for $2,000. They've gone down in history and drag machines. But I know you're no longer into muscle cars, as you mentioned. But let's get a little bit better understanding of what cars you are into. So with this question, if you had unlimited funds, in a three-car garage, you can only have three cars to own to fill up those spots. What cars would you choose?
I mean, you can't have anything else.
You cannot have anything else. That is it. You're only three cars.
All right. Well, I mean,
but you have unlimited funds. So remember
that. Sure. I would say, honestly, it sounds kind of not super lofty, but I think the 458 Speciale to me is kind of the ultimate Ferrari. I think it's the best Ferrari's ever produced, and I don't know that ever will do better. And that's not to say that I wouldn't rather have an F40, but I think I would rather drive around in a 458 Speciale, because the F40, you can't really take places very easily. It's kind of a pain in the ass car to own. But that being said, like, you know, I'm kind of practical in a way. So like, I'm sitting here thinking, oh, you know, I want like three supercars, you know, like, so obviously, like, if it was just going to be supercars, you're gonna have like the F40, a Speciale, and probably something like a LaFerrari, but you can't have those three cars and be a normal functioning person if that's the only three you get. So like, you know, I love my stupid Dodge Ram. It's so damn practical, so I kind of enjoy it. I probably want that.
Okay, still. Perfect.
And then obviously I need a car for my wife, so it'd be like, what do you want? And I know what my wife wants. She wants a Mini Cooper.
The Mini Cooper from the channel, right?
Yeah, I mean, she loved that thing. So like, I don't know that I would change those things just because I have unlimited funds, if I'm only allowed to have three cars. Okay. So, you know, that's the trick, right? If you could have like five cars, oh, well, then, you know, it's different.
Okay, well, I'm actually curious, Ted. If you could still have your Ram and your and the Mini Cooper, what would be the other two cars in those spaces?
Gotcha. Yeah, I mean, the Speciale would be up there. And I would say, I mean, I think the F40 is probably like the ultimate halo car. You know, it just epitomizes rawness at the time, and I think the styling is just outrageous, you know. And there's something to be said about it being Enzo's last car, so, and frankly, just having been around them now and ridden in one, they're just phenomenal. It's just a phenomenal car, even though it's really not that fast in modern standards. It's still just outrageous for the time.
Yeah, definitely. It's a legend, right?
Yeah. It kind of, I mean, how amazing would it be to just drive that somewhere? You know, it doesn't even matter where.
That is true. So, all right. So we have the Speciale, and any other one that you would put in that third space?
I don't know. I mean, I do think the LaFerrari is kind of like the ultimate in modern craziness, but I that's a tough question because there's just so many incredible cars. I guess if I had all the money in the world, I'd probably get a Pagani Huayra.
Huh. Okay.
I think that that's probably one of the craziest attention to detail cars ever made. I mean, just, they're beautiful in a way. I actually think they probably drive like crap compared to some of the other cars.
Probably, you know, yeah. Like,
but it's just, it kind of is almost over the top, but I don't know. Every time I see one in person, I just think there's so much care that went into and thoughtfulness in every decision about that car.
No, that's, you're right. And that is an amazing, amazing machine. But yeah, mm-hmm. you know, along with how it looks and how it was assembled, yeah, it probably has a crappy ride, but who knows?
Yeah.
I've never driven one, so.
Yeah, I've no way to gauge that.
Yeah, exactly. All right, perfect. Thank you for sharing that. And I know I threw a curveball there at the end with adding two more cars. So thanks for being a good sport about that. But you might hate me for this next question, though.
All right.
So have you ever played Track Daily Crush?
Oh, I know what you're talking about. Yes. Okay.
Okay, perfect. All right. So just for everybody that's listening, if you don't know, I'm going to give him a list of three cars. One's yep. going to be his track car, one's going to be his daily, and one's going to be going to the junkyard to get crushed. So, Dan, you kind of did it to yourself, and I have yep. to do this. You're going to hate me. But I want to explore your decision on these three cars.
Okay.
We're gonna take that Ferrari Speciale that you mentioned. Okay. All right, from your three-car garage. We're going to put in there your Dodge Ram. And this is the curveball that you might hate me for because you might get in trouble. I don't know. You might not. But we're going to put in your wife's Mini Cooper.
Oh, geez.
Yeah. So,
I can already tell you, I would track the Speciale. I would daily yeah. the truck. And I would crush the Cooper.
Oh, okay. Well, all right. Well, that was easy. I thought it was going to be a little more difficult for you, but
I mean, that's a pretty logical thing because I mean, you're not going to track the truck. I mean, that would just be miserable. Other be comical.
Yeah, that is true.
So you're down to tracking the Cooper or the Speciale, and let's be real, you want to track that Speciale. I mean, that's what it's meant for.
That is.
And true. Personally, I love my truck. I mean, even though I hate trucks, I love my truck.
And you know what? I was trying to go that route, I know you love your truck and I know you love this Ferrari, but I know that's also your wife's car. So I was trying to make it a little bit difficult. Didn't work out. So
great. Yeah, she might hate me, but yeah.
But thanks for playing that. That was a first that I've done, but also a first of that quick of an answer to what I thought was going to be a difficult question. So thank you. So we're kind of, well, we are nearing down to the end of the episode, and it's been a great talk with you. I loved hearing your story, your incredible journey, and definitely look forward to hearing more things and seeing more things from you and the team over there. Now, a few last questions one question and one comment. The last question is, somebody that wants to follow in your footsteps, what would you tell them? What is that advice that you would give them to help them along their way?
I'd say don't. Just don't. It's been really hard. I mean, here's the thing is, no matter what it is that you, I mean, you know, I guess we're basically talking about careers here because, you know, I don't want to give life advice because that's just, you know, you got to live your own life.
Yeah.
But for careers, you know, there's a few things that I find are very consistent among highly successful people that I've met. And I would say self-motivation and a strong drive to work hard are probably the top indicators of someone's success. So there's always a level of luck. You know, you could be the best and brightest person in the world, but if you aren't born into a lucky situation, you might not ever be able to utilize that. So that being aside, you create some of your own luck. I've believed that strongly throughout my whole career. And what I mean by that is, you know, there's been certain things I've done, whether or not I was conscious or not, that led to decisions or things, whatever, that could be, that kind of manifested the ability for me to take this next step. So, and I apologize, my son's he's pissed off down there, and you know.
But it's all right. Anderson wants to be on the little Anderson wants to be on the show too. He's welcome.
he got his 2-month vaccinations today, so he's a little grouchy.
I can imagine. I remember those days.
Yeah. So, but I mean, you create your own luck by working hard. You create your own luck by taking the right risks when the opportunity presents itself. So you got to think about what it is you really want to do and position your career and your decisions to guide you in that direction. And I usually like to tell people, you got to kind of reverse engineer what it is you want as your final goal or as your end state, you know, and it's really important that you set goals and you start working towards how to achieve those things. Right. So, you know, whatever it is, I don't know, maybe your goals are to, you know, like, I always a lot of people always say, oh, my goal is I want to be a millionaire, or, you know, have 5 cars or something like that. And I think I always tell people, you know, material things are shitty goals. They really aren't very motivating when you really get down to it. So yeah, you know, like it's kind of a side effect of the goals that you probably actually want. So when you say, oh, you know, like, I want to own a Lamborghini Aventador, cool. That's not really a good goal, because like, it doesn't guide you. It doesn't tell you anything of how to get there. It's just a thing. It's some tangible item that is a result of a goal that actually is worthwhile. So you take that and you say, okay, actually, the goal isn't to own the Lamborghini Aventador. The goal is I want to become a manager at my whatever job, you know, like I'm working, you know, I'm going to just talk about software because that's obviously what my career was, but you, like, you know, you might be early in your software career. You just came out of college and you're writing code and you think, well, I want to own a Lamborghini Aventador. Well, no, you don't. You want to become a manager because the manager position allows you to make enough money to be able to afford that Lamborghini. And you know, that's just an example. You know, I'm not even saying that's true. There's so many different ways that you could get there, you know, but that's how you got to kind of work your career. You got to reverse engineer how to get to these goals. So if you say, okay, the end state is being a manager at this job, well, how do I get to the next step? You know, if that's step 10, what's step 1? And so you got to back it out and say, okay, well, become a manager. First thing I do is become a team lead. Become a team lead. The first thing I got to do is take ownership of a project. Okay, to get ownership of a project, the first thing I have to do is, you know, I don't know, whatever. You know, create some application that, you know, invent something, whatever. So you got to kind of back it out and then say, okay, the first thing I have to do is this small step. Yeah. I have to first do this thing. And yeah, it, you know, maybe it's not that rewarding to accomplish that thing. Maybe it's not the most important thing in life. And maybe it doesn't even really look like it changes anything for you. But that step's important. And it has to happen in order for you to get to step 2. You can't skip to step 2. It just doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
So people always want to get to the end goal in their careers, but they don't want to put in the work that it takes to get there. And the reality is, to get there, you're going to have to do some bullshit. It's going to suck. You're going to have to suffer. You're going to have long nights. You're going to have hard work. You're going to have missed pleasures. You know, you're going to have to defer things that you want to do now in order to achieve that thing later. And I think that's, you know, again, it's super important and it's super consistent in a lot of these successful people that I've met. So, yeah. That's kind of a good summary.
That was amazing, man. I didn't even want to say anything because you were just on a roll there. And that was some incredible advice that you're giving out to the listeners. And it's true, man. I mean, I can't even sit here and kind of cliff note everything you just said. But guys, you if you If you like any part of this episode, which I know you will, but what I would recommend is for you to go back and listen to a few parts of it, but that part specifically, you guys need to rewind that and keep rewinding it until that seeps into your brain, because Dan just freaking broke it down to how you can become successful in life with the reverse engineering, with actually putting real goals, not just a result or what comes out or an outcome of what you reaching your goal would be. So that is amazing, Dan. Thanks for that. And that will definitely hit home with a lot of people for sure.
Yeah, it's been a, yeah. It's been kind of a consistent theme, I think.
No, definitely, man. And that's amazing advice. Now, last thing. Well, first off, thank you for all of that. Thank you for the conversation with me. Your insight, your story, your advice was amazing. It's incredible. And I know it will definitely resonate with a lot of the listeners. Where can people go and just check you out, check out what you're doing? We've kind of already touched on it a little bit, but I want you to, you know, take this time to just let everybody know where they can find you.
Sure. I mean, the most obvious thing is go to my YouTube channel, Normal Guy Supercar. That's going to be the majority of my media presence, I guess, you know, is a way to say it. But I'm kind of everywhere, although I use certain platforms more than others. So like I have a Twitter account. I don't really use it that much, but you can find me there. It's Normal Guy Super C, because they don't allow that many characters. And then Instagram is at Normal Guy Super Car, all one word. And so is Facebook at Normal Guy Super Car. In order of priority, YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, and then Twitter.
Perfect, man. And then they could always check you out at normalguysupercar.com.
Yes.
Consulting services, actually, guys. Consulting services. Yeah,
I suppose I should have started with that, right? That was actually, I totally screwed it up. That was actually the most important, is normalguysupercar.com. Yeah. And of course, you know, if you're looking at these conversions, that's gated6.com or European Auto Group. I think it's EAGSATX.com. You know, the kind of married companies, I guess you want to say, they're very intertwined, even though they're separate. But yeah, that's kind of my entire presence. Actually, you know what? People can email me directly if they want to. They can email me dan@normalguysupercar.com, or if they like just have car parts they want to get, they can email sales@normalguysupercar.com.
Yeah, I wish I would have emailed the Dan one, because I think I'd emailed you at sales to to talk to you. But either way, it reached you, so that was good either way.
Yeah, the catch is if you email sales, I might not be the right person to respond to it.
Okay. So there, you guys hear it, guys. Definitely check out Dan's channel. Check out his social media. Check out his website. Take him up on that offer on the consulting. I mean, if you're in the space of getting your own supercar, needing to talk to somebody and getting services, he is definitely a great guy to talk to about that. And you know, it'll definitely be beneficial for you. And check out his car parts. Check out Gated Six. And we're definitely looking forward to seeing what you guys are going to do in the future, Dan. Thank you so much for talking with me today. I know I want to be respectful of your time. And I know little Anderson is over there waiting for you to come back. So, thank you for taking time to speak with us. And it was a great conversation. I hope to have you on the show back again.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for the invite. Motor Misfits.